This is Paige, host of Reverie True Crime. As you can imagine, my tastes are a bit on the dark side. So when I shop for unique novelties and gifts, I always keep an eye out for something a little out of the ordinary. That's why I shop at Batwings and Butterflies. Batwings and Butterflies is an independent creator-owned and operated boutique of handmade knit creations that run the gamut from the wild side to the dark side. Here you'll find knit toys and stuffies like baby Baphomets and giant tarantulas, household knits like blankets, doilies, and water pipe cozies, and so much more. Every item is an original work of art handmade with love by a talented artisan. Order your one-of-a-kind creation today. You can also make a special request and Bria, the creator and owner of Batwings and Butterflies, will make pretty much whatever you want. Order your one-of-a-kind creations today. Find Batwings and Butterflies on Instagram at Batwings and Butterflies or shop at batwingsandbutterflies.bigcartel.com. That's batwingsandbutterflies.bigcartel.com. My favorite products that she makes are these huge knit stuffies that are perfect to snuggle and cuddle while listening to Reverie True Crime or any of the shows on the Darkcast Network.
Darkcast Network. The light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
A Wednesday episode? That's right, spooky bitches. Welcome to another episode of the Freaky as Fuck podcast. I'm your host, Sarai, and I just wanted to pop in the middle of your week to just kind of have a little kiki, a little discussion with you about the series we just wrapped up on convicted Colorado serial murderer Scott Lee Kimball. When I was first introduced to Scott Kimball, not like personally, but like to him as like his crimes that he committed. And I had seen an episode of Evil Lives Here on ID. Don't worry, I'll have the episode information in the show notes. So I see this episode on him and it was nuts. They mainly cover his marriage to Lori McLeod and the whole thing with like her daughter Casey. And Lori is actually on the episode. The whole thing is a retelling of her story. And that episode stuck with me because, spoiler alert, by the way, skip ahead a few seconds if you plan on watching the episode. Okay, so it stuck with me because he actually tells Lori that he works as an FBI agent, not that he's actually just an informant. And I remember thinking, like, how the fuck did this guy get away with lying about working for the FBI for so long? Like, and to his wife. Like, the whole time they were dating and then all through the marriage, she really believed that he worked for the FBI. And it just, like, baffled me. So I had decided a long time ago that this was definitely a case I wanted to cover, But it wasn't until I started doing my research for the series that I found out the real, like, scope of it all, I guess. The amount of information, the scams, the fraudulent checks, the women he was involved with, his childhood even. I had no idea about all that until I started doing my own digging. And my fiancé will tell you, every time I found out a new little detail, I just closed up my laptop and sat there because I just needed time to process, you know? Like, I really had no idea what I was getting myself into, and that's kind of why I wanted to do this little wrap-up, because there was so much that I wasn't able to include in the two episodes because I thought it was just too minute of a detail. Like, I really wanted to just get to the meat of it all, but there were some details that I just couldn't keep to myself, so here we are. So revisiting episode one, and in regards to the sexual assault charge on Theodore Payton, I had mentioned that Payton did get convicted and he was sentenced to 7 years. After just serving a little over 5 years, he was released in early October 1996. And when he was released, he went right back to that cabin in Netherlands where he abused his victims. Like, how fucking sick is that? Now, he wasn't registered as a sex offender until late March 2010. It wasn't until a couple of concerned mothers contacted the Netherlands County Sheriff's Office and brought up the fact that he wasn't registered did the authorities even realize, which is fucking, that blows my mind. Like, I'm supposed to feel safe with you guys. Like, you are not making me feel safe at all. Now, granted, this was what, nearly 14 years later. I'm sure a lot has changed since then, but still, I mean. Next, I want to discuss Leanne Emery a little bit because the FBI really dropped the ball when it came to her disappearance. Leanne had become involved with federal inmate Stephen Hawley, who was also an acquaintance of Scott Kimball's. The two had met in prison, and Hawley often referred to Kimball as Hannibal. So Hawley puts Hannibal in contact with his girl, Emery, because she's supposed to help break him out of prison. Hannibal first makes contact with her on December 25th, 2002, and by February 16th, 2003, Hawley starts getting worried because he hadn't heard from Leanne in over a month. So he reaches out to her father, Howard, via letter, and he just wants to know if Leanne is okay. So Hawley starts getting frantic and insists that Howard reach out to the FBI, as he feels something has gone terribly wrong with Leanne. Somewhere toward the end of February or the beginning of March, Howard Emery reaches out to the FBI to voice his and Hawley's concerns about Leanne, but he's not taken very seriously. The agent supposedly even called Howard a liar and told him that he wasn't gonna waste his time on the matter, basically. 4 years later, Howard visits Hawley in prison, and this is when he mentions the name Hannibal. Howard reaches out to the FBI once more, but of course, he's ignored once again. Fast forward to 4 years later, in October 2007, Detective Thatcher and Special Agent Grusing are notified of Leanne's disappearance while investigating the disappearance of Jennifer Markham. So this is the first time Stephen Hawley is interviewed by FBI. The first time. 4 years later. When it comes to Scott Kimball, I read in a lot of places that the FBI was under a ton of scrutiny for the decisions that were made when it came to him being an FBI informant. Sometime around fall 2005, Special Agent Carl Schlaff is removed from Kimball's case. No one really knows why, but I mean, we can kind of all speculate. Now remember, Schlaff was the one who stuck his hand out for Kimball. He was the guy who asked Spokane PD to forget about the warrant they had out for him because he believed that he had valuable information on the disappearance of Jennifer Markham. Yikes. But, like, how could he have known? I mean, everyone else was buying Scott's bullshit. How was Agent Schlaff to know what would come of his decision. And it's really unfortunate because you can only imagine how those who have survived Kimball feel about their decision to put their trust in him and to completely believe the lies that he told. Take Lori McLeod, for example. That poor, poor woman. In September 2003, I had mentioned in part two that Scott and Lori go on a quote-unquote honeymoon to RV park in Kremlin, Colorado. This is 3 weeks after Casey had last been seen. 4 years later, Casey's skeletal remains are located in Raut National Forest. Kremlin is just about a two-hour drive south from there, so Scott knowingly took Lori on their honeymoon just about 70 miles away from where her dead daughter lay. Like, what an absolute piece of shit. In September 2010, it's released that Kimball is being investigated for the 2004 unsolved murder of Katrina Powell, who was last seen on East Colfax Avenue in Denver on October 24th, 2004. Trigger warning, this is going to get a little gruesome. We are going to discuss the finding of a dead body that had been mutilated. She had been found dumped naked behind a strip mall in Westminster. Her hands had been severed off, and there was evidence of blunt force trauma to her head. Her autopsy report revealed that she was found with chemical burns all over her body, and cause of death included strangulation. In a book that Ed Cowett, Scott's cousin, wrote called SLK Serial Killer, Cowett describes a 2009 interview between Agent Grusing and an inmate where he recalls Kimball saying that he, quote, picked up a hooker off Colfax Ave, gave her drugs, strangled her, and then used chemicals to test how they would react with her skin. In another article from the Denver Post from September 2018, it was reported that local and federal agents were investigating Kimball in as many as 21 murders in Colorado and across the western United States. He today even remains a strong suspect in the murder of Katrina Powell as well. In a 147-page letter Kimball wrote to his family in March 2011, he, for the first time ever, admits his full responsibility in the murders of Jennifer Markham, Leanne Emery, Casey McLeod, and Terry Kimball. Now, before I let you all go today, I wanted to let you all know a little piece of useless information regarding Kimball's arrest that is just so fucking stupid and ridiculous that I'm actually upset that I know this. So of course, if I have to suffer, you are going to suffer right along with me. The song that Scott was blasting out of his speakers while he was leading police on a chase in California on March 14th, 2006 was Nickelback's Rockstar. Isn't that just the dumbest fucking thing you've ever heard? Yeah, I can't stop thinking about that. So, whatever. Do what you will with that information. Anyways, thank you all for tuning in today's wrap-up. I hope you enjoyed this episode, as well as the entire series on that asshole. If you guys have any feedback, or you want to shoot me a story of something that you'd like me to cover, or just like anything really, you know, just shoot me an email. You can email freakyafpodcast@gmail.com. Or you could even, like, reach out to me on socials. You could find me at freakyafpod, that's FREAKYAFPOD. Reach out to me on there, converse with me. I love interacting with people on Twitter. It's, I don't know, it's cool. You're all my fam. You're all my interweb fam. Anyways, it's Wednesday. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I'm so happy Friday is within reach, but yet it feels so far away. Anyways, I will see you on Sunday. Have a good rest of your week, and stay spooky. Bye! That's FREAKYAPOD. I actually haven't spelled that out in a while. Oh my God, I almost forgot how to spell that. That was embarrassing. I'm going to edit that out.